Hello, everyone, and welcome to The New Yorkers, a podcast by New York City Cop. I'm your host, Kelly Kopp, published photographer, NYC tour business owner, real estate content creator, podcaster, and above all else, a New Yorker.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next Brooklyn-bound train is now arriving.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
With me today, I have urbanist Ariel Vieira. He is the creator of The Urbanist, Exploring Cities YouTube channel. He is a world traveler, content creator, and Peabody winner. But above all else, he is a New Yorker. Welcome to the show, Ariel, and how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm so honored to be here, especially talking about anything New York.
No, I agree. I'm so excited to have you here because, you know, I've seen you for years on social media. And I've always admired you. And it was so awesome to actually see you in person last week. And we connected. And so thank you for saying, yeah, you'll be on the podcast.
Yeah, it was the first time crossing paths after following each other for about 7 years.
Yeah.
Because I first encountered you, I think, late 2016, early 2017. Yeah. It's awesome to finally meet you in person.
Well, I'm glad you said that. Because when did you start doing your social media across the board here?
So I've been in social media for a very long time. Since 2009 is when I started a music blog on Tumblr. And I was a daily music blogger on Tumblr for 6 years. And I was one of the top music blogs, along with Pitchfork and a few others.
Is Tumblr still a thing?
Probably, but almost no one's using
it. I mean, I used to love it, but I feel like it just disappeared or something.
It basically disappeared. So unfortunately, I lost my blog because they kicked out a bunch of music bloggers due to music copyright litigation. So they just decided to ban music bloggers outright. And I was one of so many that were kicked out overnight.
Oh, man. Yeah. You probably worked up built up a huge audience, too.
I did. Well, this is pre-big
what
social
we're doing,
media
yeah.
day. So I had an audience of 8,000.
Pretty good.
So at that time, it was pretty sizable.
Yeah.
It was my first way of like seeing people in real life and like concerts. I would see people who read my blog and they would say hi to me, which was very fascinating.
Cool.
Yeah. And then video I've been doing since 2016 for 7 years at this point.
I'm trying to think of when I think photos with Instagram, you know, when it was just starting out, I think maybe 2012 or 13, I started with videos. Probably around the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. So how long have you lived here in NYC, Ariel?
I'm one of those very rare native New Yorkers.
Really?
Yeah. So I was born in Puerto Rico and I came here 4 months old with my tiny little suitcase.
By yourself, your suitcase, hopped on a plane.
Yeah. Yeah. So my family decided to come over here and then I ended up being raised in Jackson Heights, Queens.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then I've been in New York ever since.
I always, because, you know, you're so worldly in general, I feel. You know, so before we started the podcast today, I was thinking some of the questions to ask you. And I was like, gosh, I wonder where he's lived, because I don't feel like you were born in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, New York City, obviously, is worldly, but I feel like expanded your horizons outside of the city before you.
Well, growing up in Jackson Heights basically was living across the world.
That's true.
Yeah, because I did not grow up basically around no Puerto Rican. So I did not have the typical New Yorican experience, which is a Puerto Rican raised in New York.
Yes, exactly.
Only through family friends where I met other Puerto Ricans. And then at school, I was surrounded by South Americans. So my Spanish sounds more neutral as opposed to more Puerto Rican. And then the other thing is I grew up with like Indian music and Indian food and Chinese food and everything.
It's funny because when we were talking at Rockefeller Center where we met in person, I was listening for an accent. I was trying to think, where is he from?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's funny.
Multicultural Queens accent. Yeah. Dead ass.
You know, I thought maybe there would be a little hidden accent in there somewhere. Well, I lived for a while in Washington Heights. Oh. And I love that neighborhood. Very Dominican. That's the beauty of New York City. It's just so diverse. Just so much to do and see and eat.
Oh yeah.
Like Dominican food. And
that's a great thing. Every part of New York has like its own little subculture.
Right. It does. It definitely does. I have a kind of a funny question. Are you left or right-handed?
I'm a lefty, so
you know what? Because I'm a lefty too.
Oh, you are.
And we're Rockefeller Center. I saw you. We noticed our other lefties.
Yeah.
And I, for some reason, I'm like, I think he's a lefty too. I know it's silly, but you know, I noticed it.
Well, that's good. We have a higher chance of becoming president.
Yeah. Is that your? Oh, yeah. That's so funny.
It's like 70-something% are presidents.
I read that too.
Yeah.
and very famous people like are lefties too.
Geniuses as well, like Albert Einstein, I think, was.
Oh, really?
But yeah, there's a lot of famous lefties.
Yeah.
There. Oh, but you know, ironically, when it comes to like live streaming, I alternate my hands.
Do you?
Yeah, often.
Yeah.
Doesn't that get tired out holding the same camera for like 2 hours?
That's funny. I think I'm a full-on lefty because some people say that they bat right with the right as a right-handed person or whatever. I'm like a left. I'm lefty all the way.
Well, I used to play handball, New York City handball, wall ball.
Oh, wow. Right-handed?
I was a righty.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm a righty in sports and lefty and everything else.
We should just make the whole podcast about being lefty.
And we're not talking about politics.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Never politics. That's my rule on my pages. Do you talk politics?
Oh, you too? Yeah. My rule is no politics.
No.
Unless if it's more than 100 years old.
Oh,
yeah. I'm like down that. To talk about the nuances of the Spanish-American War.
Right, yeah. That's
but
true.
No, yeah.
Oh, don't that's a good. I like politics. That. Yeah, no politics for me, whatever. So tell us about you, Ariel, and how the Urbanist idea name started. And, you know, when did you start?
Yeah, the idea started when I launched the Facebook Live programming for Curbed, which is under Vox Media.
Yeah, exactly.
And Facebook Live was paying these major media companies to start live video. And Curbed at that time did not have a full-on video team. So as a social media manager, I volunteered to do it. And it got tens of thousands of views off the bat. It was a huge success. I had to wrangle camera-shy editors to be on camera as well. And that was a lot of fun.
Right.
Because that was a different challenge in of itself. And then they decided to... I got a call from my manager, who they were all very sweet people. In the company, but the creative difference we had was that they didn't want me to be on camera anymore.
Why?
Because I wasn't an expert. That was not my training, and that, from their perspective, they preferred having someone who was a established journalist about New York. But I disagree. So yeah. I decided.
I mean, you are in it. I feel you are. You know, you
at this point, of course, yeah. But at that point, I was starting out, but
yeah.
I knew that I was doing a very good job. So I decided to quit and do it on my own.
Good for you.
In terms of the term urbanist, it was tricky because, it was hard because I wanted to find a single word name.
Right.
And not have something too complicated. And it was going to be called Ariel's Travel Adventure Show. Because that
And also,
I wanted to be something not New York specific in my case, because my intention was always to travel. And then also I knew that I loved cities. Specifically, I was never going to be the travel vlogger that goes to the rural areas of India,
right,
or Burma or something like that. For me, it's like big cities. And then I did a video about Jane Jacobs, for Curbed because I was running their Snapchat, and I did a poor video of Jane Jacobs, and she was deemed urbanist honorifically because she was a person who, without any study. Any degree in urbanism, urban design, or architecture, or engineering, she ended up learning about the city just by walking around. And that's what the term urbanist means, at least here in the States.
I guess I'm an urbanist, too.
It's an honorific title, generally. So I wouldn't dare to call myself the urbanist, an urbanist, but I decided that that's the great name for the show, because it's like...
I love the name.
Yeah.
It's really, it's a classy name. I like it.
Yeah. And then when I went to Paris, I ended up realizing that the name makes more sense because in Paris, they use the word flaneur for someone who wanders around the city.
Oh, nice.
But a flaneur is different from an urbanist. A flaneur is someone who wanders around the city and gets to know the people. But an urbanist is someone who wanders around the city and gets to know the city's design, how the city ticks, how it works.
That's so interesting.
And that's me. That's my style.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the name too. It's just a really nice name. It's very professional too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it's a very professional name. Like if I saw you before I knew you, and I've just felt like it was a very professional established page before I even met you.
So that was the other reason I called it that. Because it was on Facebook. And the easiest way to grow a Facebook page at that time was to get other pages to share the live video or any type of video.
Right.
Especially bigger established pages.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to basically act like as a brand, even though it was just myself, the name Urbanist sounds like a big media brand.
It does.
Yeah, like yeah. Gotham.
And I like the orange. It's orangish, right?
Yeah.
I read something just the other day. You may know this because I don't know much. Maybe I shouldn't be bringing it up. But it explained why, you know, orange is such a popular color in New York City. Do you know why?
Well, because the New York flag is orange. It has orange and blue.
Right.
And then the Mets as well.
Right. Do you know the history behind that at all?
It's due to the Dutch.
I knew you would know.
Dutch, the Dutch flag,
right?
Orange.
Uh-huh.
Well, initially it was like a reddish, right. I think, but then it turned orange eventually.
Well, I think that's fascinating because, you know, we're founded by the Dutch, and I really didn't know this, so I just read it the other day.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I thought,
but I didn't pick it because of the Dutch. It wasn't a reference to New Amsterdam.
Yeah.
It was a coincidence. Yeah. To me, orange stuck out to me more than any other color because it's not used too much in big brands,
right?
Especially media brands. It wasn't used much.
Yeah, I agree. It's a nice color. So, what inspired you to start The Urbanist?
Let's take a quick break. Hey there, I'm Bellamy Young. I'm an actor and a producer. I've been working with the global humanitarian organization CARE, and I am so excited to invite you along for my new podcast, She Leads with CARE. Each week, you'll meet some incredible women who have changed their lives and their communities.
We raise our voices for people who don't raise their voices to defend themselves.
Listen to She Leads with CARE now on your favorite podcast platform. New episodes every Tuesday.
Oh yeah, what inspired me was ironically, I love to walk around for 3 hours or more throughout the city, but it was hard to find a friend to join me for 4-hour walks throughout the
city. I completely understand.
I don't know, people are crazy. I'm like, yeah. Come on, guys.
Who wouldn't want to?
Let's walk around for 4 hours and look at buildings.
Yeah.
And then I tried vlogging because I was inspired by Casey Neistat.
Oh yes, yeah.
Yeah. And I bought almost the same exact gear as him, the same camera. I bought the same drone.
Have you met him in person? I haven't.
I've never met him in person. Yeah. I've seen him pass by.
Me too.
And I've been to his events, but I never met him in person. And I was so inspired by him. But then when I took out the huge camera, faced it to myself in public, it was just so daunting. It was like it felt so intimidating.
Right.
I have nothing to say.
Right. I know what you mean.
But the moment I put the live video, I saw the hearts and the thumbs and all the comments pop up like it is right now. that's how I felt. I was like, oh wow, now I can make a vlog and someone joins me.
Right.
And that made it more special, more fun to me.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. I do understand that too. I just it is gratifying, and I'm so grateful too to have an audience like you do, you know, people's hearts and stuff, and you know, come to your page to see what you're doing often. And what I love that you do too is it's not just New York, you know, you travel all over the world.
Yeah.
And so how do you choose to go to these other countries? Like what inspires you to go to these other countries, and how do you choose them to go to and do stories on them?
Yeah, you know, it's a interesting fine balance because it has to be walkable. In order to make compelling live video, and then in turn to make a huge amount of reels and shorts to be very efficient, it depends on walkability. So the city has to be very walkable because if I require a car, it slows me down.
Right.
Like in LA, I was able to do maybe a video or two per day maximum. But in Rome, I could do 5, 6, 7 videos. I could do a lot. So, and then the second thing is density. It's nice when the city's dense.
Right.
Like Paris, like mm-hmm. Rome, like Athens. And then the other factor is lots of history. So you might have a dense city and you might have a walkable city. But what I encountered recently, like with Toronto, it's fun to live stream and walk around, but there's not that much deep history around.
Interesting.
Or at least not obvious deep history around.
I know what
around.
You mean. Yeah.
So the ideal city is those three factors: walkability, density, and history.
And then how much time to give yourself to come up with the idea to go over there and go over wherever in the world and do your stories?
Oh, or, I don't plan too much. So you know, to me, it's more whatever I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And then because I know if I'm interested in it, then my audience will be interested in it.
Right.
Because in order to be selfless, you have to be selfish, I think, in media. You have to think about what you find fascinating, yep. what you find interesting, and then that'll come through the camera.
Completely agree. And people will feel it. Yep, your passion, you know, for what you're doing. So you have a Peabody Award, and can you tell us about that and how you got it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I won the Peabody for a micro documentary series about the history of racism in New York City. So it was six short videos about different spots in New York City that have a history of racism,
mm-hmm.
of race relations in New York. And that was posted to all the platforms.
Right.
But the Peabody recognized Instagram primarily. Those videos, I did it with my colleague, Khalil Green, mm-hmm. who runs Gen Z Historian. And he is already an expert in covering race relations and the history of it. So it was awesome to collaborate with him to tell these stories, some of them that I already told before, but it was nice to hear his perspective,
right?
And his spin on it. And we did those videos for the Peabody. It was six of them, but in total we end up making now at this point maybe 14 of them. Mm-hmm. And we were under the interactive and immersive category for excellence in storytelling, which is the first time they have this category.
So what is this? What specifically is a Peabody Award for people who don't know what that is?
A Peabody is an award for the excellence in storytelling. So similar to the Pulitzer.
You do that so well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. That was always been my goal has always been to become a master storyteller. That's always been my goal. Like I want to put my 10,000 hours in to become an excellent storyteller.
Because I watch your videos and you're telling these, amazing stories and in depth. And I'm like, my videos are like, there's the Empire State Building. There's here's Central Park. It's great though. I learn a lot from you.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of video. It's all different styles.
And so how did that come about? Did they contact you and said, oh, we see your content. We thought it was, Peabody material. How did that work that you got it?
So the Peabody's is similar to the Pulitzer, where they're extremely mm-hmm. rigorous in mm-hmm. selecting who they allow. So they get thousands of submissions, but they only consider 1,000 of those submissions. And then from those 1,000, they dwindle it down to 70 nominees. And down to those, from 70 nominees, I think it's like 30-something winners.
Good for you.
Yeah.
What an accomplishment.
And everyone on the board of jurors are media scholars, the majority of them. So these are professors of media in various universities throughout the U.S.
Wow.
So these are academics and intellects.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's really hard to win the Peabody in that context. How did I get in? I never in 1,000 years would have thought I would have won an award for short form video
mm-hmm.
because it's short. And right. it's a bit ephemeral, comes and goes.
Right.
I always envision myself winning something for like documentary because mm-hmm. that's where I put the most big effort in, months and months of effort. But it was a friend of Khalil's who told them to apply to nominate ourselves.
Right.
And he did, and we got selected. And
you win.
Yeah.
And I don't think I met him. Your friend who works with you.
He was based in New York City only temporarily.
Oh, okay.
He's from DC originally.
Oh, nice. Wow, that's good for you. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And what's, you do you have it on your wall at home? How's it work? Do you have it like?
So the Peabody generally awards big TV shows and radio broadcasts. Mm-hmm. That's what traditionally the Peabodys were for. So they only give one award.
Oh.
It's similar to the Oscars. They give it to only to the producer.
Oh, yeah. Because of our Oscar. Go ahead.
So they only give it to the producer. So in this context, so there was only one official recipient, which we decided it's better Khalil because he was the star of the show.
Yeah.
But I got to go to the event, and so he has the actual physical award.
Mm-hmm. But you have a Peabody Award regardless.
But yes, I am designated on the site as director, editor.
What a cool accomplishment.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you. That's really cool. Really, really cool. So what is your typical day like in New York City?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I got a lot of questions coming up.
Yeah, so... You know, typical day, I don't have a real typical day. So I don't plan my videos unless if I'm working on a bigger documentary. I don't plan my live streams nor my short videos, anything. Yeah, you know, I just wake up and decide what to do. So I am a very slow person to wake up.
We have a lot in common. because I totally get it. Yeah.
It takes me like an hour.
Look at Jay shaking his head. Yep.
So it takes me 1 or 2 hours to really get set up. And then if I might feel like editing a short video, I might feel like going out and doing a live video. I might feel like researching. It's usually a combination of all these things. Researching, reading, listening to a podcast, looking at a lecture, and then going out for sure. This is the key part of the process, is going out.
Yep.
And sometimes it's better to go out without a plan, because especially in these big cities, I run into things that I would have never found on paper or on a guidebook. Like, I recently did a video about Dimes Square.
Just saw it. I love that.
I decided to hang out at Dimes Square, and this is something I would not have read in the newspaper or a journal, but I saw that there was massive seating.
Can you tell everybody what Dimes Square is, too?
Dimes Square is now a micro neighborhood at the end of Lower East Side.
Yep, it's really cool. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I saw a bunch of seating outdoors, and they basically closed off the street to make it into like a public square. And this is something I bumped into, and I realized, oh, this is basically European style.
Yeah.
In my opinion, we should have more of this.
And it's Dimes Square, you guys, with a D, right?
Yeah, with the D-I-M-E-S.
Yeah.
Yeah, and rather than time.
Yeah.
But those type of videos cannot be planned.
Completely understand. That's basically what I do, too. You know, I feel like organically things just happen, and you find things, you know, that
especially in photography.
Exactly.
Photography, sometimes the frame just pops up to you.
Exactly. Like, I feel like organically the scene just presents itself in front of you, you know, like just these someone walking with a dog and something else happening and a cab and this and that, you know, it's just, you know, a sunset at the same time it's all happening, and you just stand there, it'll all transpire right in front of you. That's what I love about it.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can't always control the elements of the city. So it's better for the city to come to you.
I completely agree. Well said. So I'm going to ask about a few videos that you've done, because I want to know about these two a little bit more. I've never been to Smoke and Jazz Club. And I loved your video on that. How was that?
Oh, yeah. Smoke, they reached out to me. They invited me over.
Oh, very cool.
Which was very nice. Yeah, it was cool to do the video. So they reached out to me to do a short video, a reel. Well, what would you like to know about that?
I don't I watched the video, but you know what, you know, let people, you know, just telling people how your experience was. You know, it's a classic old jazz club, and I don't really know too much about the history, so to speak.
Yeah, so I think the venue was an old jazz club for many years, but the iteration now was opened up by a couple about like 10 years ago or so that are European. And they recreated this kind of old New York style that you see in Birdland or the Lincoln Center Jazz Club.
I mean, your video really makes you want to go. I've wanted to see it, but now that I just watched your video, I'm like, I got to go see it. I got to go there. We got to go there, Jay.
Yeah, it's something that you don't see in the guidebooks.
Yes, and it's where is it? It's
in the Upper West Side. Yeah, close to 100th Street.
Yeah, I've walked by it so many times, and I feel like it's a classic, popular jazz club.
And jazz is having a bit of a resurgence now in New York City, which is very nice to see. the downside is a lot of these jazz clubs in lower Manhattan are becoming a little bit too hip. So it's very hard to be spontaneous and just go to a random jazz show.
Have you been to the one down by West 4th Street courts? There's the West 4th Street basketball courts, and right there, I think it's
Blue Note.
Blue Note.
Yeah, you know, there? I never me managed either. To go to a show there.
I wanted to go there too.
Yeah.
Maybe we should all go.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm serious.
There's a better jazz show down there called Mesro.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Mesro feels a little bit more like a intimate jazz venue. It's small, it's underground.
Oh, very cool.
And it's all warmly lit brick walls, so it feels like really classic New York.
Is there one at Columbus Circle?
There is, yeah. There's the Lincoln Center Jazz Club.
Yeah, have you been there?
No, yeah. I never managed to go up there yet.
Yeah, I want to check these out. I really want to check these jazz clubs out.
The downside is all these places are extremely expensive.
I know.
Then you have to make reservations a long time in advance, too.
Well, maybe they'll invite us.
So
what about the Hess Triangle?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a really interesting piece of information in New York City. Do you know much about it?
Well, I've made so many videos on it. Mm-hmm. And the reason I keep making videos on it is, A, because I have different platforms, so it's nice to make different versions of it.
You know, I was going to ask you that, too. I was looking at your pages, and do you feel, I'm sorry, I'm, derailing from this question.
No, of course, go for it, yeah.
But do you try to keep all of your platforms, like TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, the same content, or do you change them according to, make them more specific according to the platform?
That's a great question. So all the platforms get the same type of reels / short form video content. The only difference between them is sometimes length.
Oh, yeah.
So on TikTok and Instagram, I could go pretty long. Now,
true.
My longest posted short video right now is 8 minutes about Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on performance, depends. So on Instagram, it will perform well. On TikTok, it kind of depends.
Do you have a preferred platform?
Yeah, it's the preferred platform for business-wise, for the ability to make an income, is YouTube.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then Facebook is complicated. Facebook, some months it's very nice income, other months is nothing. It's ups and downs.
Yeah.
And the ebbs and flows are sometimes big peaks and very big pitfalls.
Mm-hmm.
TikTok is nice because that's where I get my bigger brand deals, because of the audience is so big, and then brands just for some reason like that younger audience. And then Instagram, I really do pay attention to Instagram a lot, because I end up getting very high profile people following me, which in the long term, in terms of business, is very good, because that's why I get these projects with with WaterHub, which is this lobbying group for improving the water systems in the U.S. Because they like that my audience, people from AOC to Dana Perino, who used to be the former press secretary for George Bush, to Don Lemon, to John Leguizamo, to the Baldwin brothers. Yeah. A bunch of people follow me on Instagram. And that's very nice. But of course, what matters is the general viewers. And in all the platforms, the general viewers are amazing. The ones that I feel more connected to, just because they leave longer comments, they're more engaged, is definitely Facebook and YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of Facebook. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I think they're more engaging and like to have sometimes conversations, and I like Facebook a lot.
Right.
I don't do YouTube. That's one thing I need to, jump on more. But with everything that we do, that's the one that I've kind of left on the side. So the Hess Triangle, though, I'm so sorry. Can you tell us about it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So the Hess Triangle is this tiny little triangle.
Yeah.
It's the smallest piece of private land in New York City, which is now a smoke shop.
Yeah. Well, I think it's closed now, too. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly.
So go ahead. Yeah.
So, it's a tiny piece of private land that was an anomaly from a case of eminent domain. So the city wanted to expand 7th Avenue, because 7th Avenue used to be a way smaller street through the West Village, and it would just curve. So they wanted to demolish a bunch of these blocks of houses and other businesses in order to expand 7th Avenue. In order to do that, they had to either buy up the land or claim eminent domain and buy it on market value. And one of the victims of eminent domain was the Hess family,
yep,
which owned a huge apartment building there, about five stories or something like that, that went on what is now modern day 7th Avenue. And they claimed eminent domain. However, there was a mistake done by one of the people who worked in the city government who forgot to include a tiny little piece of triangle.
That's like this big.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's it can only fit maybe two people's feet.
Yeah, exactly.
So you forgot this little piece of triangle, and the Hess family got wind of it. And they realized, oh, we still own part of this land. They no longer own the rest. So in order, out of spite, they put a message saying, this land has never been given to public property of the New York City. It's private property. So,
I love it. Those lines. I walk by it all the time. I look at it and I tell people, point it out and tell people about it.
So don't step on it. Technically, it's trespassing.
Yes. Oh, is it really? You get arrested.
Technically, yeah. Technically,
cops,
you're trespassing.
Stand in there. You just sit on the triangle. Yeah, I think it's a really cool little piece of New York City history. This little tiny piece of history.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. One more video I want to ask you about that I thought was really fascinating was, you did a video on why do buildings not topple over?
Oh, yeah. I think you're referring to 601 Lexington.
I just think that's something that we all think, you know, we all, especially living here. Well, I guess most people around the world, we see these buildings that are super tall or just in general, you know, just why do buildings not topple over New York City? Because I think about it, you know, I think about what is the possibility? Because, you know, sometimes we go up in them to do photos, we get invited. And in the back of my head, I'm like, I wonder if this thing can fall over.
That's right. Yeah, I encountered that when covering the building 601 Lexington, which is the City Corp building in Midtown East. And that building was a unique case because it was built on stilts, and the stilts are not on the corner of the building. So if the building had a very heavy wind, like a hurricane, hit it on one of the corners, rather than collapse like most buildings would, like unfortunately the World Trade Center did. Like recently at JP Morgan, it was a controlled demolition. That's what they did. Instead of doing that, it would actually topple, which would be havoc for that area of New York City. Luckily, that did not happen and probably won't happen. But that's why I end up learning why buildings don't topple over.
It's just, I recommend everybody listen to that. It's a really good one.
Yeah.
I loved it. I look at the really super, super tall New York City buildings too, and it's fascinating to look at the air shafts that go through so many levels too.
Yeah, now with
super
the
tall ones, they're left open spaces so the air can go through the buildings, and I think that's fascinating on the super, super, super tall ones.
It is fascinating, yeah. For example, with 432 Park Avenue.
Right, that's the one I'm thinking of.
It's technically five different buildings.
Really?
In terms, architecturally speaking. Because it's the air shafts hold the other parts of the buildings together.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
There's five air shafts throughout the building.
I don't like going in them. I just don't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes me, it'd be a dream to go up there and, you know, do content out of those penthouses 100 floors up. But have you been in one?
Yeah. I managed to get access to,
which one?
To Billionaire's Row. I got access to Central Park Tower.
Nice.
And I got access to Steinway Tower.
Wow.
The Steinway Tower was basically an Art Deco version of the Palace of Versailles in the sky.
Wow.
Yeah. Did you
do a video on that?
I was not allowed to do a video.
Oh.
it was funny because I binged making real estate videos for a few months.
Yeah.
So I just made all the real estate videos I could because I wanted to see if there was opportunity there to make a living. I end up finding out no. Real estate video, there was not really too much opportunity. But I end up getting invited to go to those two buildings. However, I did not know. They just told me I couldn't film. And they didn't tell me a reason why. I end up finding out I couldn't film at Central Park Tower because Ryan Serhant had exclusive rights to the media of Central Park Tower. But it was cool still going in. And going in, it was mind-blowing because I saw extreme wealth in New York City.
Oh, yeah. I mean, top-tier wealth in the world.
And then in Steinway Tower, I saw the lobby and I saw the people walking into the lobby and you wouldn't be able to tell that they were extremely...
Whether McDonald's or something.
Super rich, yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah, yeah. It was, yeah, just, it, yeah, was just a hodgepodge of people, yeah, from all around the world, and not just what stereotypically they say would be Middle Eastern or Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
You saw everyone.
Yeah.
It was very fascinating seeing what would appear very normal people on the street were,
really,
going to their apartments in Steinway Tower.
That's really interesting. You don't have a fear of heights, do you?
I do not.
You know why I'm saying this, you guys, on Ariel's video? Is because we went to Top of the Rock and we did the beam, which I didn't want to do really. And Safat, the NYC walking show, is like, you got to do it. And you were on one end, I was on the other side. And I look over at Ariel, he's just like, yeah. I'm sitting there holding on for my life on the beam at the Top of the Rock. And people, I put it on my page and people were kind of cracked. They're like, look at the guy on the right. He's scared. I'm like, that's me. And then you're like on the other side, all happy. And
I leaned over to see.
Yeah, you were like loving it, you know? So it's funny how some people, you know, you just had no cares in the world. You were loving it. When it was cool, but I'm a little scared of heights, obviously. So.
But have you been to the top of skyscrapers for photos and videos?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't enjoy it.
Okay.
But
okay,
for the views and everything and to take photos and videos, you know, I have to talk to myself. Like, you can do this. You can do this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I do have to talk to myself a little about it. So
I think I personally got desensitized to going to high rises because doing so many videos in high rises,
yeah,
got me the taste for it. And then the glass walk at the edge. Also,
I finally did that just the other day.
Oh, you did? Oh, nice.
It takes me time. Like, I went up, you know, I can do the Empire State Building easily now. I used to get nervous and anxious about that. The edge, but all those have been up quite a few times now. So not those don't bother me at all.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I have to work my way up to it. I mean, I will do it, but I have to work my way up to it.
Well, one of my proudest live streams is doing a live stream going up to a 12,700 foot mountain in the French Alps.
Won't do it. Good for you.
And then they had a skywalk similar to the edge as well.
No way.
Which was so cool. And then the cable car is similar to the Roosevelt Island cable car.
I don't like the Roosevelt Island.
But except you're going 12,700 feet in the summertime. It was summertime and below. This was early August, late July, and 80 degrees down below. And then I saw snow up above.
I'm sure it was breathtaking.
Quite literally, because you're short of breath due to the altitude sickness. And I did get high, not just in elevation, because of the altitude sickness.
Right, right.
Above 10,000 feet, you get
altitude sickness. I would never do that. Yeah. I just won't, you know.
But that gave me a taste. It was like, oh, now I want to experience all the heights.
Wow. So would you skydive and paraglide and all that stuff?
Well, I'm not stupid. actually, no, I
like
would not. I would not, you know, I was tempted to.
I can see, like, why not? I don't even need a parachute. I can do it.
I'm in entertainment, so I have to talk a big game sometimes. No, I would do paragliding. That's scary because I fear the crashing and not dying, crashing and becoming paralyzed. That's very scary. And that happens more often than someone falling from a skyscraper.
You think I'm going to, no way in heck would I do that.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I mean, you couldn't pay me, you know, no way.
It would make for a good live stream.
So, from the ground for me, I'll put it on, tie my camera to the paraglider or whatever. But
you know, the good thing about live streaming is that it's pushed me to situations I would usually not do.
That's true. I do agree with you there. Yeah, it does push me. So, like, you know, even like the Manhattan Bridge, when I first walked it, I didn't like it because... Right. You know, the subway goes over every minute or almost, you know, every couple minutes, and it shakes the bridge so hard, you know, and you're way up there on the Manhattan Bridge.
Very loud, too.
And it's loud, and I'm thinking, oh, this is an old bridge, and, you know, you think things. But now I walk the Manhattan Bridge all the time. I love it.
Have you learned the history of the Manhattan Bridge?
Why don't you tell us? Because I don't know. Maybe.
The guy who built it, I forgot his name now, but the guy who built it, built the Manhattan Bridge first. And then he built the Tacoma Bridge.
Oh, really?
I forgot where Tacoma is. It was one of those states in the center or in the south. And that Tacoma Bridge was the one that started wobbling like crazy during a windstorm and collapsed. And they found out that his style of bridges was not conducive for strength in a windstorm.
The guy who built the Manhattan Bridge.
Yeah.
So what did they do about that?
The city has spent hundreds of millions of dollars annually to fortify the bridge.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So, it's
but
good.
Still, it's still the most dangerous bridge in New York City. Still to this.
Guess he's not walking on the Manhattan Bridge anymore.
So let's go. Let's go again. Well, you know, in the way, it's fun, especially for live streams. It's fun talking about sometimes the darker parts of history or architecture.
Yeah, I do love this.
Because it gets people excited, yeah. Like, oh, you're walking this very dangerous bridge.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting. I do love it.
Yeah.
I do love scary stuff. If I'm sitting in my living room watching it on TV, but you know, yes, I'm gonna walk the Manhattan Bridge still. It's not gonna stop me. It's not gonna stop me. What is your favorite borough? Do you have a favorite borough?
Favorite borough? That's a good question. The one I gravitate to the most is Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I just love the vibe of Brooklyn. It's nice. It's lots of waterfronts, lots mm-hmm. of different neighborhoods.
Yeah. Got Coney Island too. Yeah, I love Coney Island. I love the vibe of, I don't know. I really recommend people going to Coney Island.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I think it's just really fun, and Friday nights is free fireworks, and it's just, have you been there for the Friday night fireworks?
No, I've never been for fireworks, but I've been to Coney Island many
times.
It's
really cool. You know, and just it's such a great people watching place, and it's so much diversity on Coney Island, and you meet so many people, and I've had so many conversations with people there, and it's a great place. I love it.
Yeah. The good thing about Brooklyn is that the majority of it is pretty dense, so mm-hmm. it's very walkable in most of the neighborhoods mm-hmm. over there.
It is quite a trek to get there.
Yeah.
Like people think it's like when people haven't been to New York City before, you know, and they're like, yeah, we're going to go to do this and do that and do that. You're like, no. It's a 2-hour trek on a weekend to get to Coney Island sometimes right. on the train, on the subway. So
yeah, it's an entire half day basically.
Sometimes people ask me to do like, hey, can you go to Coney Island and do a video? I'm like, that's like a full day trek I got to plan out. You know, it's a lot, you know, and plus I live way up in Upper Manhattan.
Right.
In that area. So, I mean, and Coney Island is way down here, you know, so it's a trek.
Yeah. It's like when I did a video of City Island, which is.
I've never been there.
Yeah. City Island is most New Yorkers really haven't been.
Yeah.
Unless if you really live in that area
mm-hmm.
or you're like from the Bronx.
Yeah.
It's like a hangout place during the summertime.
How's the beach? That's what it's known for, right? Is the city island have a beach?
No, the only place
above it, I think there's a beach or something.
In the Bronx, there is a man-made beach.
Yeah.
I forgot the name. It's Orchid Beach, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, City Island does not have a beach. City Island is an island, but it has like a bunch of seafood restaurants.
Yeah, is it cool?
It's really cool. Yeah. It has a cool history, too. And it really does make you feel like you're not in New York. It makes you feel like you're in New England.
Huh.
But that goes to show how huge New York City is.
There's a neighborhood below it that has like that looks like Cape Cod type area too. It's right below City Island, and I can't remember what it is. I went out just to check it out. It has a pier, and it looks very Cape Codish. I can't remember what it is.
In the Bronx as well.
Yeah, in the Bronx, and I can't remember. But it took some time to get out there on the bus. But it was cool.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the neighborhood. It was the neighborhood.
Probably Throgs Neck, maybe Fort Totten.
I can't remember. Okay. It's such an impression, but it was pretty cool. So have you had a celebrity encounter that you really enjoyed?
Oh, yeah. James Cameron, I met him in person for a signing, and he complimented my beard, which was nice. I shaved this part of my beard, so I had like chin straps.
Yeah.
It was before making videos, and he said I look like a Wolverine mixed with a Civil War general.
That's pretty cool.
And then I told him, like, oh, it's because of you I want to make movies. And he asked me, oh, man, hey, what movies have you done? Because he already assumed I was a filmmaker. And I got very shy. I'm like, oh, I haven't done anything. And he looked me directly in the eye and said, you will.
Wow.
And if he says so, then okay, I now have to do it.
That's really cool.
On video, I think I've encountered celebrities. Someone in the live stream will tell me actually if they remember. But I've passed by a few celebrities on video.
Me too.
Yeah,
a few times.
Yeah. But I can't recall at the moment.
I saw George Stephanopoulos
on
Park Avenue.
Oh, nice.
And Liam Neeson one time walking by Park Avenue, Central Park. But they're in the distance, you know.
Now I remember one person I saw was Sarah Jessica Parker.
People go crazy over that.
Yes.
Seeing her. Yeah.
I didn't get to meet her, but yeah. I saw her through the window into the shoe store.
That's pretty cool.
And there was a big scene. Yeah. Everyone was there.
She is just the epitome of New York, you know?
That's
so,
right.
So people love her. You know, I it's cool to see her.
My most interesting celebrity encounter was at the Peabody Awards. A guy came rushing over to me. Say, hey, man, I really love your work. I'm in New York, and I loved learning about the history. And he looked so familiar, but I had no idea who he was. But he looked really familiar. And he's, like, complimenting the show. And I'm like, hey, man, dude, do I recognize you from somewhere? He's like, I've just done a few things. And then he goes off. And then my friend Khalil Green says, oh, man, that's the star of Glee, Darren Criss.
Oh, he's cool.
Very cool guy. And then I clarify, I verify he was indeed following me.
That's pretty cool.
That was funny because I asked him, because he's a very big celebrity. I asked him, like, hey, man, what do you do?
He's like, nothing. A little singing and dancing here and there.
So it was very lovely meeting him.
This little show.
I wish I knew what he did.
That's too funny. Do you have a favorite street food?
Favorite street food in New York City? It's tough. I usually wouldn't eat from carts nowadays.
Yeah, I understand.
But a good slice, especially from now one of these new specialty slice shops, like Lucia nearby here in Soho, is amazing. Joe's is always great.
Right.
Yeah. Bagels. I love good sausage egg on a bagel, on everything bagel.
What's your favorite? Do you have a favorite bagel place?
No one place sticks directly to mind. I like Russ and Daughters for the lox. And then I like Bergen Bagels in Brooklyn, Prospect Heights. They make the best bagel sandwiches, in my opinion. But to me, it's really hard to discern a really great bagel.
Right.
Modern bagels I like as well, but it's hard to tell the nuance. Can you?
Well, I think they're all due to the water of New York City, because we have the best bagels and pizza, which I'm sure you probably talked about too. You know, that's the reason, because the water from the Croton Reservoir, correct?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have the best bagels and pizza in the city because of the crust or the, you know, because the water from, the Croton Reservoir. And so I think any bagel or any pizza is actually really good in the city. I don't really have a favorite. I mean, Essa Bagel I go to sometimes, but that's pretty much.
For the classics, that's the bagel's probably the best.
Yeah. So I like Front Street Pizza in Dumbo on Washington Street right there. And Front Street, where the Manhattan Bridge is, with that famous scene right there. But Front Street Pizza I really like too. But I have one more question.
Yeah.
Or two more. Is there an NYC myth you feel is false?
Oh, yeah.
That's a hard question.
That's a very hard question. There's a lot.
I didn't expect you to say that.
There's a lot of myths out there. Some of them that I found out historically as well. I think my most amusing myth is every house museum and every historical site that's related to a revolution claims that George Washington was there.
Oh.
it's a running thing all throughout this part of New York. And if you go to also Long Island,
right.
Like, oh, George Washington slept here. He slept in a lot of places.
That is true. I have heard that. That's funny.
Most of the time it's true, but I find it very humorous that so many places claim that George Washington was there at some point.
That's a good answer.
Yeah.
That's a really good one. But I think that...
Cultural myth, I can't really think of anything right now. Oh, I think the one cultural myth is that New Yorkers are unfriendly.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a saying where they say that New Yorkers are not nice, but they're kind,
right?
As opposed to LA, which is the opposite. But I think that's the case in New York. People won't be nice. They won't be very like, oh, thank you so much for coming. Yeah. Oh, you're amazing. Generally, that won't be the case. But they'll be kind if you need help.
Yes, I agree. I see on the subway, New Yorkers offering information for people how to use the subway or what stop to get off at and things like that. I totally agree. Well, awesome. This was really fun, Ariel. I had a really good time.
I had a blast.
Yeah. So before we let you go, we here at the New Yorkers podcast want to know what makes you, Ariel Vieira, a New Yorker.
Well, first you have to live here 7 years, and then you go through an initiation process where they knight you with a hot dog on each shoulder and yes. crown you with a Yankees or Mets cap, depending on which one you choose.
I love that. I love that. That's the best. That's one of the best answers. It's so great.
What makes me a New Yorker? Well, I've been here my entire life. The tricky thing about social media is that everyone will claim that I'm not from New York. And this happens to basically any New York content creator,
mm-hmm.
including the ones that are literally from New York their entire lives. So I don't even try to qualify it. You know, what makes me a New Yorker is I just love being in the city and I live here.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. That's nice. Nicely said. Thank you for joining us today for this week's episode of the New Yorkers podcast. Why don't you let everyone know where they can find you on social media?
Yeah, you can find me on YouTube, Urbanist Exploring Cities, Instagram, Urbanist Live, Facebook as well, and on TikTok is Ariel Vieira.
Once again, I am your host, Kelly Kopp, also known as New York City Kopp, all across my social media.
Please like and subscribe to the New Yorkers podcast, and you can follow the New Yorkers on social media at the New Yorkers podcast.
You can leave a rating or a comment to let us know how you are enjoying the show. We read through all your comments and DMs, so please, we would love to hear from you. Thank you, Adeline Sever, Marsha Green, Melanie Russell Hill, Carol Ann and Kevin Wildley, Laura Hillard and Catherine Smith, Leanne Anthony, and Sam and Cameron Johnson for watching or listening to the podcast.
And thank you, Norma Miranda, Edith Bull, and Kevin Alexander for your comments on Facebook as well.
Have a lovely day, and we will see you next Sunday.
Have a great day.
Have a great day, everybody.
This is the last stop on this train. Everyone, please leave the train. Thank you for riding with MTA New York City Transit.